Hello, and welcome to episode 150 of Dualistic Unity Raw. That is fucking crazy. 150 episodes of Dualistic Unity Raw. I don't even notice these go by anymore, frankly. I mean, these conversations are always so useful to me as a person because it gives me a chance to not only express what it is I've become, but to actually recognize what I'm expressing. So there's a lot of learning that happens in these conversations. And I just want to say to everybody, thank you so much for being a part of that. Whether it's in the comments section or on Patreon, leaving a comment on Instagram or TikTok or anything like that, your expression adds to the ripple. Thank you.
And they're getting to be a lot of fun too. The amount of things that you can just have some fun with. And the more you become a question mark to yourself, the more exciting things get. And I never thought I would say anything like that. That like being a question mark to myself. I might get that. Maybe that'll be one of my first tattoos. Just a big old question mark.
That said, enjoy this episode of Dualistic Unity Raw, which is our 150th. And it's Sunday. I'm excited about today's episode. We were just having a fantastic conversation, and I'm going to reiterate some of it just because it was that fantastic. And I understand that's a fairly subjective thing. You're like, well, wow, Ray, you really have a high opinion of that conversation. Well, I was there. That definitely helps. We were talking about something that Andrew and I live streamed last week. At the end of last week, we decided we were going to play a video game. And we set up on Twitch and YouTube, and we started streaming a game called Guns, Gore, and Cannoli 2, which you can find on Steam. Dope game, a lot of fun, 2D side-scroller. The point being, Andrew doesn't have a huge history with video games, and my history with video games was always one of an addict. One of somebody looking to escape the pressures of life, which is one of the reasons I don't play video games anymore. It's very rare that I will play video games. And if I do, it's like maybe an hour or two in a month. It's very rare. And it's just because I recognize it was always something that I looked to get away from the world for a very long time. This is why I gave up my computer during that period of my life where I kind of woke up to who I was. I gave up a computer. I gave up the internet. I stopped being connected to the world as a whole. And then I went to the woods. And then I didn't have a computer again for a period after that. And it was just because I wanted to put myself right here without distraction. And so to be able to play the game with the specific purpose of just playing, no other purpose, just for the purpose of playing, not to feel better because I wasn't feeling bad, not to escape anything because I don't have anything to escape, but actually just to share the experience of playing and watch Andrew enjoy the experience of playing a video game, which is not something that he's done a lot. And so we did this live stream and it was fucking dope. It was a lot of fun, but a lot of things dawned on me. And so I want to talk about them briefly here, and then I'm going to let Andrew talk, I promise. One of the things that I found really interesting about the rise of Andrew Tate. And for everybody who remembers, Andrew Tate became very popular with mid-teens to early 20s especially. And he did so by tapping into the video gaming world, tapping into Twitch and websites like Kick and Trovo and stuff like that. But basically, he tapped into the video gaming live streaming world. And in doing so, he ended up connecting with a lot of these younger people who were looking for someone to look up to, someone to emulate, someone to give their life a purpose, someone to make them feel like they could get more value. And so all of a sudden they all gravitated towards him, and he ended up with a massive following because of the state of mind that he was essentially in there trying to take advantage of. I am the father of a teenager, and I recognize how important it is at that age to be reinforcing that they are everything they need, that there is no other thing outside themselves that they need to be or aspire to become, or no other person to emulate in order for them to have value. It is so important when we are going through our mid-teens, especially, to not run into these snake oil salesmen. And unfortunately, we can't do anything about that. The world is full of them. But I thought it was beautiful when we were playing this video game, as we started getting new followers and new viewers from Twitch, from the gaming community, and they were coming into the conversation listening to us talk about how, oh, you know, it's funny how we're taking this seriously, gotta relax, you know, we're getting kind of frustrated, but why what's on the line here? And it's, so it's such a different conversation, a conversation about self-acceptance while we're just playing video games. And so all of a sudden there was a few new viewers, and they had never been exposed to that conversation in this world that they were used to. And so that really excited me. And then over the last few days, I've received a few messages from different viewers just saying it was really cool to see you guys just kicking back, playing a game. Because we always talk about the value of play. And in fact, this conversation is very much play to me. But to actually see a game in motion as it's happening, to see the two of us just fucking around, having a good time, and even, dare I say, getting a little caught up in ourselves from time to time, especially when those bastards won't die. There's that one big guy, man, who kept taking us down. That dude's a fucking machine. Anyway, the point is that it's a different experience, and I'm really looking forward to sharing more of that experience. I'm excited about this new phase of Dualistic Unity where we just get online from time to time, fuck around, and play a game. And we're even looking at a game where you may be able to join, viewer. You and some friends may even be able to play in a tournament style game with us or against the Dualistic Unity team. There's going to be more on this in the future. But I'm going to stop talking now. I'm going to pass it to Andrew and say good morning to all of you. Hi.
Good fucking morning. Oh man, it's admittedly my brain, I feel like, has been going, you know, the detaching, rewiring stuff. It's having maybe a harder time with reconciling the fact that, you know, gaming and playing, which admittedly doesn't necessarily come super easy to me, doing that, like being work, like a form of work, something that is actually something that could not even just be monetized, but have an impact out there, just expressing whatever it is that's going on. What is up, Jay? How you doing, man? Like, just doing that. And then because, oh God, like when I was younger, I played video games for a bit, but couldn't, you know, and I texted Ray this. I think that right around the time I started lifting weights was probably around the time that I stopped playing video games. And that was when I was 13 years old. So I was fairly young to be at that point where, like, I straight up started taking myself. And I think that was just reflective of, like, taking myself more and more seriously, was doing that. But it started as such an innocent thing. Like, when I was started lifting, like, it was just kind of cool at first, kind of like how I feel in a lot of ways with Wing Chun right now. And I catch myself sometimes when I'm like feeling good, because like I'm starting to get things quickly, you know, and then I'll do it, you know, the instructor will have me show it and he'll be like, oh, good job, you know, stuff like that. And it's giving me memories of like when I was younger and the thought of like, you know, being one of the best sports players are like in the class when, you know, you do something, the teacher uses you as an example. And like, it's starting to hit me like, oh, that was starting to build that idea, that sense of self even. And so, what was I talking about? The take myself more seriously. Like all of that started to, I don't know, formulate. And again, it's like, it's always in flux. It's not like, you know, I started at 13. It's almost like a, I don't know, at least this is how I think about it, like a disintegration, you know, when something's like solid, maybe a solid, you know, say black to start and then white when your fully ideas formulated or vice versa, whatever you want to do. And then there's like a sort of spectrum between, but then you're always in that spectrum and it's not like one spectrum. And so from like, you know, maybe 5 to 15, it was very disintegrated. There was a lot of, you know, addition, subtraction, addition, subtraction, but like over time, it's almost like something swirling big and then getting tighter and 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 tighter throughout your life until we're at a point where it's almost like a breaking point, or you just stick with it and ride it out, or you pull one thread and, you know, go through then the backwards instead of the tightening, getting tighter and tighter and tighter, the, you know, loosening and fucking tension and relaxation, all that stuff. And so this is all to say, I think I've been on three tangents throughout this, that playing video games was something I couldn't comprehend, like being worthwhile. And yet the amount of experiences that I missed out on, because like my little brother, for example, played video games way more than I did growing up. And he was online, he was with his friends, like talking about stuff. And like, that was a lot of just interaction even that I missed out on because I had this assumption about this thing. And now it's like, you know, later in life, maybe some of those early on interactions would have helped me with sides of my life now, and like would have helped, you know, helped me in job situations or all of these things. Like, of course it does. So it's crazy how we'll just make this overarching idea of something and assume that there's something right or wrong with it. And even, you know, even in choose, and I'll stop there. I'm not going to go into that part, but yeah, just like that. Yeah.
I'm stoked about the whole thing. I find it funny because you played baseball. What started as a game eventually ended up becoming a kind of work. It started trying to get you somewhere and it stopped being play. But, you know, in this case, it's just about keeping it play. Like, the entire point is to let it remain play. And that's going to be fun. But we have so many stigmas against video games. And this is going to be a great chance to also talk about video games and some of the impacts of video games and some of the things to watch out for. I was actually thinking we should do a workshop, Zen and the Art of Gaming. That'd be a lot of fun because there's a lot to consider. But there are things that, in the same way that we were talking to someone the other day about how there is a level of connectivity that the internet provides right now that really does make certain opportunities possible that weren't there previously, but it also leads to things like, you know, internet trolls and the rise of other things. Anyway, the point being is that there's possibility there. Well, there are team building exercises that companies do all the time, like, hey, let's get everybody out to Miniput, or hey, let's get everybody out to, you know, some kind of an event that brings us together, or let's get somebody to come in and run a workshop. And so that brings them together. But there's a lot more remote work now, right? Why not have a team tournament on some platform that allows for that? I mean, it's a lot of fun. It brings people together. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing so. But again, it's the temptation to get lost in video games, right? It's the temptation to make them replace life instead of add something to life. But that comes down to responsibility, like everything else, just like everything else. And so this is an excellent opportunity to have that conversation, to actually be in the video gaming world and just shoot the shit about it, while at the same time addressing the toxicity that often comes out of it. Because as my daughter said, when she recognized that all of a sudden we were going to be streaming in gaming categories, she's like, just be aware, the people there tend to be toxic. To which my response was, oh good, this will be fun for us then. Because that's how to turn that around. I really do believe that, not believe that, but I really have witnessed that toxicity comes in, and then it really comes down to what you do with it. Does it continue with you, or do you find peace with it and turn it into something else?
Oh man, and that's kind of what we are, is like the opportunity for not to change anything about what's coming in, you know, like the inputs, like the situation, but just being able to not reflect it, like taking the responsibility to see that it's always my response to whatever's going on, you know, like in the video games. And it's, I swear to God, it's like, this is maybe one of the best things I've ever done for being myself. Because I was catching anyone watching the first stream, like, I was getting kind of frustrated. And it was bringing back how much, like, self-frustration that then turned into self-judgment, I think, in a lot of ways. And, like, maybe was that. But it kind of turned into that for that it was just, like, a baseline. Because I've mentioned before, when I was younger, I would play, like, tennis. And fairly good, but then, you know, as soon as something like missed a couple shots in a row, I would freak the fuck out. Like, I would freak out to the point that I couldn't even keep playing. I would just like bash shots like over the net or over the fence, just like, or just hit it, swing as hard as I could and like try and get it in, but like wouldn't give a shit. And it would almost like, it would almost be like I was throwing in the towel just out of, just from my own frustration. It was never about, like, if the other person was doing some stuff, I never really got that angry at anyone else. It was all just anger at myself. And so, so playing this video game, and this is just, honestly, the whole situation is kind of mind-blowing that, we, like, we could play video games for 3 hours this afternoon, and, like, there's... It's not to say that there's a point to it, but there's like an underlying, like, this is actually an okay thing for you to spend your time doing. Like, this is okay. Like, you're allowed to do this. Like, even just doing that. And so with the self-frustration, like, that was coming up early on in the game, and I realized, like, oh shit, I'm taking myself seriously. I'm taking myself really seriously, instead of it just being like, oh. And paying attention while being relaxed. Because, like, getting frustrated at myself, I'm not paying as much attention. And so it's straight up a practice, and helped me to realize that, you know, this right now, we're on Raw doing this. Like, this is kind of a video game in a different way. I'm just using a different, you know, remote maybe. And, you know, I kind of use my hands too. But, yeah, so the whole thing is blowing my mind in a lot of ways.
Oh god, this is gonna be great for sure. I'm really looking forward to it. It's also a lot about the assumption of impact. It's like, well, I'm playing a video game, I could be doing something much more productive. I could be doing something that's far better for me and the universe. It's like, are you sure? And this is why it really just comes down to, and I know immediately right there your brain's like, well, obviously, you don't want to just sit there playing video games your whole life. Like, immediately that judgment comes up. Immediately, it's just like, well, what is it going to do? I get that. There are a fuck ton of streamers out there that make more money than so many of us. I'm not even going to argue in terms of what produces value in this society anymore. But I think the important part is to recognize that if you look at need, if you're looking at exactly what I was talking about earlier in the episode, if you're using the game to escape, being honest about that is going to pull you away from that game. But if you're not using it to escape, if you're already enjoying your life, what's the harm in playing a game? On the other hand, what's the harm in holding on to the idea that you can't? Because if you don't, somehow you're backsliding or not being productive or not serving a purpose. How much tension goes with that need to constantly be productive, progressing, and serving a purpose? Perhaps playing the video game is exactly what you need to detach from that need to get somewhere for a little while. Maybe playing that video game is something very akin to sitting down, having a moment to yourself, allowing yourself to focus on something where it's just you versus your own frustration, because that's often what video games are. You versus your need to get frustrated because it's not going the way you want. That can be a great practice. And so, as with everything, I think it really just comes down to recognizing where something can be a trap versus where it can be a tool, and that the distinction is within us. And so, yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun, because again, it's an example of play, which doesn't mean that we can't have conversations like this. This is the funniest part about this, is that we're going to be playing games, and we're going to be able to have these conversations while this is happening, but in so many different ways. Like, you were saying that this is not that different from a video game itself. The world of virtual reality agrees with you. And so there's a whole world of conversation we can get into as we play these games, not to mention that the games themselves, depending on which game we play, offer different insights, offer different conversations. Like we were talking about getting into StarCraft 2. For anybody out there who is looking at a video game that we might be playing in the very near future, StarCraft 2 is totally free. Check it out on Battle.net. Anyway, StarCraft 2 features three different races of beings and involves advancing technology, military strategy, as well as cooperative play. So we have to learn how to communicate with one another. We have to learn how not to panic and get angry when one of us is getting attacked and somebody else can't make it down to defend them. Like, there are so many different things that go with this because it's an experience in itself. This is why video games are so immersive. It's because everything I just described to you is everything that somebody in an actual battlefield would be going through without any of the terrifying possibility of actual death. So you get to have these wonderful experiences and then just turn it off and go back to your life. It's very much like a book or a movie or a well-told story. This is why I enjoy video games that have an accompanying story. Jesus, that word's hard to say.
Yeah, and I like how both of us kind of have our own reasons for, like, you were playing video games, but judging yourself for doing it. I was judging myself before I even allowed myself to play video games. It's kind of like judging yourself before you allow yourself to express yourself. And then so you avoid that. So you just do it through yourself and just make that assumption. But it, oh gosh, it really is crazy how reflective and like opportune it is. And the thought that it would ever be something that's like good for you, kind of like healthy in a lot of ways, to a sense, with responsibility, as long as, you know, everything else is being factored in. But like, you know, if this is a conversation being had online, it's just like, we already have all this, you know, a podcast behind the conversation, those accounts, all that stuff. It's like, this is just another means of doing that. Like, this is just another way of doing that. And I wonder sometimes, even just like, you know, with certain experiences and just like how to reconcile with there being like nothing, not nothing to do, but like even just going to Wing Chun class, for example, and realizing that, oh, there's lessons there that will inform my life and my conversation. If this, you know, dualistic unity, for example, is just an expression of that, then that's awesome to be able to do that. And it's the same with, you know, a video game. And like, not even that we have to go on there and talk about anything in any which way. It'll just be expressive of our own situation. Like, just talking about the situation at hand and like laughing, even just laughing at yourself. Like, I'm curious throughout, you know, the you and the podcast and everything, like how much I laughed in each season, because I feel like it's probably gotten to be a lot more. And even just the willingness to do that. And like, if you get, you know, killed in the video game, like being able to laugh in response to that instead of responding in frustration. Yeah, because like, that's my default. Like that, I'm so quick to do that. And so it's like a process of catching myself in that and then just expressing that. Like,
exactly. I do the same thing. And the only reason I'm cutting you off quickly is because it goes in line with something I just posted. A study of nearly 2,000 children found that those who reported playing video games for 3 hours per day or more performed better on cognitive skill tests involving impulse control and working memory compared to children who had never played video games.
Oh my God. So there's straight up a stigma for video games like cannabis, almost. Holy shit. Because it isn't deemed as something that's good for the system necessarily. It cuts down on quote unquote productivity and yet has actual benefits to your own human experience. Like if you're prioritizing that and then, you know, doing what you can to live your life and not necessarily living for how you're perceived or how you're looked at or trying to be liked or anything, then that's actually one of the best things you could do for yourself, for your actual experience and your ability to like fully experience the world or reality. And like it's better for you than lifting weights when you switch that. And like that was such a big one for me so long. It was like that's one of the top healthy things you could do. And like playing video games is more than that, like not objectively, but you know, anyone looking at these stuff,
right? For sure. Because I mean, even in lifting weights, there is some cognitive benefit because you have to train yourself to keep doing it regardless of your discomfort, right? So there is some benefit there, and you get the healthy. So what I'm saying is that don't just play video games and not exercise. But as with everything, there's a balance. What are you learning? It's not like you only do one part of your life. It's not like you only focus on the physical. You also focus on the cognitive. This is just one study. There have been previous studies that show that video games actually help people who want to go to medical school later on and become surgeons. It helps with hand-eye coordination. It helps with pilots. Like a lot of this stuff. And it's just because there's a purpose there. But when you have a society that makes kids want to run away into whatever will distract them the most, then all of a sudden they're driven towards games that don't necessarily nurture, you know, those best positive cognitive things. You know, they're driven towards competition. They're driven towards bloodshed. They're driven towards distraction. You know, they up the stakes in terms of how much is in this game rather than how much am I getting from this game.
Right. And so that reminds me of just how much it's not necessarily what you're doing as much as the mentality that you have in doing it. Like then the mentality that you have in doing that informs everything else. Like if you do something, say that, I don't know, do something that you want to do and then do it with some degree of clarity, like it almost directs you into things that are just make more sense. But as long as you're doing things and thinking that there is a right thing to be doing, you're going to keep searching for that instead of just like relaxing first and chilling out and then taking a look at reality and being informed by your own state of relaxation instead of looking for it in something, like something's going to do it for you. And I think that's, oh my God, like the desire to feel better even is thinking that state that you could be in right now, if you stopped assuming that it's in another point, doing that is going to do it for you. Oh man, I've kind of assumed that with, I think, everything. At some point, it's going to do it. Like something is going to do it instead of my entire life being an expression of where I'm at with that, despite it always being the case.
Exactly. Which ties into a question that we have here in the comments section. What kind of games would you say have benefits for mindfulness? All of them. All of them. All of them have benefits for mindfulness. But you'll notice that as you focus more on the benefits of that mindfulness, or as you focus more on the mindfulness itself, you'll gravitate away from certain games, right? And it's just because you'll notice that those don't necessarily facilitate that path as well. And it's not to say that you can't use them for that, for the same thing. Like there are games that get progressively more chaotic and more intense, especially first person shooter games, that you can still focus on that of just not panicking. Like to be able to go through all of that and not panic, to remain somewhat detached while that's all happening, is a hell of a skill, right? And when you're, while still doing your best and actually just being calculating and doing all things, that's a hell of a skill for sure. But you'll also notice that you're like, yeah, but it'd be also nice to slow that shit down a little bit. Maybe play something that doesn't require me to be tapping things, like, you know, you know, person just going through a fit, because it really is like you're just hammering on buttons after a while. And as challenging and fun as that might be, it's not the only kind of challenging fun there is. And there are different kinds of games, which is why I like all kinds of different games. I like games that involve storylines. I like strategy games. I like all kinds of games. So it really comes down to what you're looking for. If you want something that's going to teach you something, I highly recommend Civilization. If you really want to learn in terms of like the history of mankind or how much shit we've done in our history, check out Civilization. Civilization is probably one of my favorite games, and it's because you start as a nomad tribe, I think it's in the year 6000 BC, in some unknown part of the map, surrounded by the fog of war. For anybody who doesn't know, the fog of war is everything around you is dark because you haven't been there, so you don't know what it is. So you basically, you got to plant down a little settlement. And you got to plant it near a natural resource, like a river or some food, because otherwise your settlers are going to die, right? And so after that, you got to like wander around, kind of explore. You run into some other tribes. Maybe they pass on a little bit of technology to you, like pottery or animal husbandry. You're that far back, right? And so then you start like growing your little civilization. You build another settlement, and then you form a little road. Now you've got some workers, and you've got a couple of soldiers. And are you wondering what animal husbandry is?
I am. Yep.
Okay. Animal husbandry was when we learned how to breed animals for the sake of creating better breeds for our purposes. I say better breeds like a true human being. Holy shit. Breeds that were more specific to our purposes, like cows, for example, that gave more milk, to the point now where we have cows where if you don't milk them, that's a serious concern. Right? They didn't produce that much milk when they were originally cows from the wild. We actually had to breed them over time. Same with horses. We bred them over time to be stronger or faster or taller, right? That's why you have Clydesdale versus Arabian horses, which are much smaller and faster, right? We did all that. Same with animals or dog breeds. The pug, perfect example. That was something that we created because rich people who couldn't have children wanted something that looked baby-like. So they bred dogs to look like that. So that's animal husbandry. It's a nice way of saying forcing animals to have sex.
Quite the mechanism of control there. It was hitting me when you're talking about cows needing to be milked. How much, you know, like with, like we drink that and it's a foggy liquid coming out of an animal. And it's just funny to me how like something like horse semen or something, like you would comparing the two from a psychological standpoint is like, and I get that, like, you know, the horse semen's used for life, but even still, like, it's just two substances coming out of an animal. Like, and I get that there's the component of our own and thinking about our own stuff and how it comes out, but like the two, They're like just things that come out of an animal, and we drink one of them with not even a second thought of like, it's kind of weird drinking this liquid out of an animal. And then the other one would be like, you know, you would throw up immediately. But they're, yeah, do you know what I'm saying? Like, they're both kind of like from a more, if you just showed up on Earth today and you saw someone take a sip of each, be like, oh yeah, that's probably about the same thing. I guess the taste is different. I don't know, dude. It was just like
probably a lot harder to milk the horse.
And even so, like, just taking a step back now, even like going on that little tangent about scratching my head about, you know, one, because I don't drink that much milk anymore, but just that, like, obviously there's a difference, obviously, but
if your brain's making that comparison, I can see why.
Even just running with that point, it's like, no, that's not, you gotta stay on conversation, you gotta stay on track here. It's like, what fucking track? What track are we staying on? It's like, that's something I'm going to run with. And then Leave you with that.
I can only assume it's because, you know, when we're children and we go to mom for sustenance rather than dad, it teaches us a little bit about nature and how nature works. So I assume that we took from that template and went, well, where did this come from and how did it keep me alive versus never tried that before? So I'm just throwing that out there. Really appreciate this conversation, by the way. Ben here in the comments was saying raw milk is amazing for you, for your health. Actually, you know, it's funny because raw milk tastes nothing like actual milk, like the milk that we get now, right? Because the milk that we get is pasteurized. It's boiled to shit to get rid of the bacteria, whereas raw milk actually has all that bacteria. Like raw milk has all of that stuff. It doesn't even look like white milk, like what you're, you know, used to at all, at all. The milk is very different. It's definitely got a taste to it instead of just tasting white.
I'm very curious now about, my mind's trying to wrap around, like, well, what's it like? It's got to be similar. Maybe it's more of this. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. But I was, the reason I was cracking up before was I was thinking, you know how women breastfeed in public? If in an alternative universe, there was the men cockfeeding in public.
Oh, what would the signs look like for the rooms, you know?
Oh, just like all the fucked up. Maybe this, like, you know, with, oh God, this is going down a dark path real quick. Like how certain things are like most atrocious things that could happen. They're almost like a deviation of another universe where instead of going to mom, we go to dad. And now it's like, all right, I think we gotta shift from here. I don't think we can go any further with this conversation because I don't know where that goes. There we go. So this is a DXR Acer. I went to a thank you, Skeptical Thoughts. I was getting skeptical of my own thoughts right there. DXR Acer. I got it at a yard sale yesterday, actually. $30. So not in incredible condition. The arm is kind of like straight up looks like someone took a bite out of it, but I'm guessing that's probably not the case, but then again, you never know. But it's a solid chair and I don't really care about a bite being taken out of the arm because it's functional and works well. And, yeah. And I got a keyboard and a mouse also. So write a fucking game.
Hell yeah. That's awesome. I'm glad that you got a chair and a keyboard and a mouse. That'll definitely make your gaming life a lot easier. Raw milk is way more creamy and delicious, in my opinion, than pasteurized milk. I just want to say, if you have a source of raw milk, keep that shit on the down low, because you may not be aware of this, but it's illegal. It's illegal to buy and drink raw milk. You cannot. It is absolutely illegal to even produce it and give it out to the public. And it's just something you should keep in mind. And I say this as someone who has had experience with people who have tried to distribute raw milk and were met with a SWAT team.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I was texting you yesterday that I'm feeling more and more like I'm either in, that this is either biblical times or a movie happening, that someone's just like the world right now. And that certainly plays into that right there. Like SWAT teams showing up for real milk. Like what is the massive concern? Like that's insane. It's like someone going to a river and like scooping up and drinking some water and a police officer showing up with sirens blaring. Like what the fuck? I don't even, do you know why the SWAT team would show up?
Oh, because it's a violation of health code. Right. Oh, yeah, for sure. No, somebody called them in and basically they alerted the cops to them. They came in, they busted. They came in and basically raided the entire farm.
What health code? Is that just the one that keeps milk?
Well, you're not allowed to sell unpasteurized milk, except apparently in Pennsylvania. I wonder where else it's legal. You know, but yeah, no, it in Ontario, and this is where this was 15 years ago or so, it was a significant thing. You know, it probably still is. And again, it's a threat to the dairy industry as well. Right? Like there's a good portion of pasteurization or the pasteurization process that's in the dairy industry. You'd be changing everything. Right? But remember, Louis Pasteur, the guy that pasteurization's based on, said he was wrong afterwards. Before he died, he's like, yeah, I was totally wrong. And it's just because you're getting rid of all of the stuff that's actually good for you in the milk. Right? You don't pasteurize your mom's milk, right? And it's because it's a biological process, but we pasteurize the cow's milk. And it's not necessarily something that we have to do. And it's because of that bacteria. And it's, again, it's like, this is why later on they're like, you should eat more yogurt, you know, probiotic, all that stuff. It's because they get rid of all the things that were actually in the dairy that would have helped with all of that.
Oh my God. So, oh man. And I appreciate when we get into these sorts of things, because there's still a lot of things. I know you've looked into a lot of the deep, dark pits of what the fuck's going on with reality right now and like all the crazy ass shit, like being able to sustain the dairy industry just because someone tried something, system was built on that. And then before the dude died, he said like he fucked up. And then what, the world was just like, or the country was like, oh, too late. You know, we already have a system in place and we don't want to change it. Straight up.
Yeah. Because they're like, no, this sounds really good. What's wrong with sterilization?
Oh man. And so like sterilization goes into everything, like as a mechanism of controlling it, as a mechanism of, you know, cutting down on the variables. You know, making it very
right down to pink slime. Like pink slime, which would be like all the stuff that won't even make it into a hot dog. That's basically, you know, scraped together, put down, made into a liquid, essentially. So it's just all scraped together and compressed and refined down to a liquid where it is then coated with ammonia or sprayed with ammonia to disinfect it. Right. And then later on colored pink. That sounds delicious, doesn't it? And that goes into a lot of processed food.
Oh my gosh. So, because you think of like laws and certain things, there's like the side of it that's like the criminal. I mean, it's all kind of criminal if you break the law. Oh gosh. Okay. Because I was thinking of it in like, you know, physical way, you know, like beating someone up, murdering, all that stuff. But those are handled in the same way that something that's illegal, like pasteurized or unpasteurized milk or smoking weed, is illegal just to maintain the status quo, just to maintain what's going on. Like all the laws are just like, no, this is it. And they're like the barrier that like can't go too far, you know, it's like can't go too extreme in any emotional direction, or else, you know, you're out of control. And so even from the extreme of like acting angrily to the extreme of acting goofy, like there's an aversion to both almost in a similar way. Like the extreme of acting silly or crazy is like, oh my gosh, they've lost their mind. And that frightens me. Versus someone so angry that they start getting violent, almost frightened. I'm not saying frighten someone in the same way at all, but it's like a, I don't know, like a similar aversion in a sense. And we, oh man.
I just wanted to go back to something here because I think Ben tried to share a link. There is apparently a website to find raw milk near you. It doesn't show up in the comment section for me, but check that out for anybody who wants to. I wanted to throw back to what you were saying earlier about the powers that be. Because again, you can wonder to yourself, is this nefarious? Is this the result of people actually planning this shit? Or is just this the result of us thinking a certain way? You know, and turning out and continuing, like pasteurization, perfect example. Okay. All of a sudden somebody says, hey, there are invisible germs that you don't know what they're doing in your milk. You don't want that. Just boil that shit out. And you, who are terrified of the unknown, go, that sounds fucking great. Then that person comes back later and says, hey, I was wrong. Those invisible things in your stomach, they're actually really good for you. And you go, that still sounds nasty. I'm going to keep boiling it now that I know that that's an option. Is that the result of some nefarious industry to keep pasteurization there? Or is that the result of us just being afraid of the unknown and our connection to everything else? Like, look at cannabis, same thing. They're so desperate to narrow down the purpose of cannabis to one or two elements. It's THC. It's CBD. You know, it's like, actually, it's the 200 plus cannabinoids that are in the plant. There are tons of elements to cannabis that are beneficial to the human body. And yet science in the medical industry wants to continue to narrow it down to THC or CBD or one of them that they can synthesize. So you don't have to use the plant. So you don't have to connect to nature. Right? Exactly. And it's just because, again, we want to know the clean way to do it. We don't understand this nature stuff. Anything could be happening. You know, we don't want to assume that we're actually part of nature and designed to interact with all of those things that could be happening. They're unknown. Therefore, we don't want any part of that. And so it's very interesting. And over time, again, like, let's take pasteurization, perfect example. So all of a sudden now we are drinking milk that doesn't have all these natural ingredients in it. And so our body isn't adapting to it. We're having to take care of our stomach in different ways, perhaps not taking care of our stomachs the way that we were for so long, because we're talking thousands of years that we got used to cow milk. All of a sudden that starts to mess with our body. Now we start experiencing new illnesses because we're not absorbing food in the same way. We're not processing things in the same way. Changes everything about our system. We start resorting to the pharmaceutical industry, start resorting to the nutrition industry, start resorting, you know, to different types of vitamins. We start looking at all this stuff just because we've walked farther and farther away from natural foods. That's just milk. Let's talk about corn. Let's talk about half the things that we're growing that are now actual genetically modified strains, or not even genetically modified in the way that people think, but genetically modified over time. Because in the same way that we learned animal husbandry, we also learned how to cross strain different types of plants. And this is why most of the corn that's grown on this planet is all the same kind of corn, rather than the 100 plus different breeds of corn that existed 1,000 years ago. So we've actually limited everything down to what we like, what we think is best, what, you know, we can produce the most of, what generates the highest yield. And we don't look at any of that as genetic modification, but it is. It's just genetic modification over a very long time. The difference between your Merlot versus your Chardonnay, or your Merlot versus your Cabernet Sauvignon, is genetic modification. Different grapes grown for different purposes, strained over time. Right? Like, we've been doing this forever. We can control and manipulate our reality. And so we do, assuming that it's the best thing from us. But each and every step of the way, we get farther and farther away from the balance that our body would achieve with the balance that the world provides. This is why the best food is the naturally grown food, right? As opposed to the artificially inflated food. It's because nature, I know this is mind-blowing, but after a couple of billion years of existence, the earth actually knows how to take care of itself. It's just that we've forgotten that we're part of it. So we have to take care of ourselves, because don't you know, we know how to do that.
Oh my God. And this whole, like, and how it's almost like, as the variables get, there's less and less and less variables with everything in the fucking cannabis thing. Like, how much, even something like that, they can try and, you know, control and they kind of did it with the psilocin and mushrooms in a sense with LSD. Like it's very much more of a controlled version. And so, you know, even taking something or smoking a, you know, pen that's been distillated versus, you know, raw flower from a plant is going to be a very different experience. There's going to be a different mentality. And so as we go and there's more and more, oh man, it's like everything in our environment is less variable. And so we're less variable. And it's almost more and more reflective, like humanity very much kind of reflective of the lack of variables. And we feel like we're getting closer and closer to there being a right way to live and everyone knowing it. And so, oh God, but it's like on all sides. So it's, you know, going, it's all coming to a head. It's all coming to a head the right way. And they're not being a division at the same time on the other end of the spectrum. It's like they inform each other. The more extremely divided, the closer we get to actually recognizing that we're not. Because if we're all actually unique in the way we express ourselves, being ourselves, that is chaotic in the sense that there isn't a right way anymore. You got to follow yourself. You got to take responsibility for yourself. That's it. And through that, because there isn't so much of you're trying to live up to a right way and you're just being yourself, there isn't so much in the way of you realizing that you're not separate from your environment. You're, because it goes hand in hand with paying attention to your environment, noticing all of the ways that it is very much reflective. You start listening a little bit more. You start hearing songs directly reflective of whatever you're feeling and hearing and going through. And it's like, what's informing what? Like, is there a randomness to the radio songs being picked? Or is there a DJ behind that getting informed by something, which has been informed by something, which is paying attention to a certain thing? And so all this sort of, you know, all the variations from like trying to get more and more control to having more and more consequences to that sense of control. And like being at a point where we can very much feel like, you know, we're in control of the world. Like humans, we feel like we're coming closer and closer to that, while at the same time realizing more and more clearly that that's not the answer. You know, that that's not, that ultimate control doesn't actually give you what you want
or exist. See, that's the funniest part. Like, we, the only reason we can believe in control is because we blind ourselves to the consequence, right? Cognitive dissonance. You know, it's like, look at the progress of humanity. Look at us and our technological genius. Don't look at the landfills. Don't look at the oceans. Try not to measure the air pollution. Just look over here. We got an iPad. look, we're working on AI. It's like, oh my God. and but that's it. It's like we're so focused on what we can control that we forget that there's a bunch of consequence to that control always. And so it's so very interesting that while our current mentality is about finding the right way, the right system, the right belief, the right path, the right mentality, the right way to dress and act and live and work and all that stuff, what we're really seeing is like you said, you know, the expansion of all the dualistic perspectives. Like, we're seeing all of the chaos that goes with everybody trying to be in control because nobody's working together. Everybody's trying to be in control. Everybody wants to be the king of their own goddamn domain. So everybody else becomes serfs. Everybody else becomes, you know, collateral damage. And so we're seeing all of these different paths trying to step over one another. And we see duality just flourish, all in our effort to find the right way. One way. And it's just like anything else in life. Our intelligence flourishes when we allow ourselves to process everything and we don't try to settle on one thing. But as a collective, we're all trying to settle on one thing. In fact, as a collective, we're governmentally trying to settle on one thing as well. This is why the elites are all in line with the idea of the New World Order that George Bush Sr. was talking about, basically a one world government. One world government, one world currency, one world religion, because that is the inevitable path of control. That is the inevitable goal of control taken to its extreme. And yet we know in that ambition, It's like trying to grip sand. It all just falls apart through your fingers. And this has happened historically over and over and over again, but we do not learn that it's not the march of empires that's the problem. It's the mentality that creates them, which is the mentality of control, which is what we have not been addressing.
Because that comes back to each and every person in their own life. And if everything, because again, it's not about the world, it's all reflective.
What? You mean the government can't make a rule telling you to not be in control?
Oh, gosh. It's like oh, man. And if they could, they would. If they could, they would, straight up. Like, you appear to be letting yourself go a little bit. You appear to be willing to be a little bit less certain than you've been throughout your life as we've been monitoring it. Like, straight up. And because even, you know, to just take cannabis, you feel a little bit less certain about things, a little less reason to grasp to control. And yet, if you try to, there's blowback and all that good stuff. But if that is reflective or indicative of a mentality that isn't quite as in control, it's like they do, like we do everything we can to mitigate all of those experiences. And like from the extreme of just like personal stigma to the extreme of it being illegal in the entire world. Like if they can't take away your ability, your own personal responsibility, and like your own willingness to have a sway over your life and choice over your life and personal choice, even if they can't do that, which there has been areas that have tried to and have in a lot of ways, and do in a lot of ways, you know, like if a personal choice would be to smoke cannabis, that's illegal. So that is the making it. Oh my God.
See, they can't stop you from having the right to choose, but they can limit your options. And that's always through a threat. Right, don't do that or there's a punishment.
Yeah. Oh, and so you gotta, oh man, so you gotta like, and I, yeah, during like cannabis prohibition, you gotta hide it if you're gonna do it. And, but you can't make a personal choice to do it necessarily.
Not without risk. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you're taking your life into your hands. Like that's the whole point, is it? And this is something that is the root of the revolution in the States, and the root of most revolutions is all of a sudden, you know, the promise of comfort, or the rather the promise of a penalty or comfort isn't enough anymore. You're like, I'm just tired of giving this up. This is my right. This is my choice. That's why I say, like, it's not the government gives us rights. We give ourselves rights by being willing to fight for them. That's what gives us rights. We can do those things and we're willing to fight for it. Whereas most of the time we're not willing to do those things, and it's because we're being threatened if we do those things. But when the line all of a sudden comes where you're like, go ahead and threaten, then all of a sudden a revolution starts taking place. Because this is the thing that the government, the powers that be, never want us to take in. There's a fuck ton of us and very few of them. Like a lot. There's a lot. Like, you ever see the movie Ants?
Yes, I think so.
Ants and Grasshoppers? I think that's the movie. No, Bug's Life.
Bug's Life.
That's the movie.
Yeah.
Bug's Life. Right. That. There's a point to that movie. And they're very much talking about the police state. Like, they're not talking about like organized crime. The grasshoppers are the cops. The grasshoppers are the government. The grasshoppers are the ones like, hey, you know, all that work you do, we want our cut each and every year. You know, all that life that you would be enjoying if it wasn't for us dropping in once a year to collect your taxes or make sure you're, you know, abiding by the bylaws or doing what we fucking tell you. Right? That's what the point of that movie is. It's not about, you know, organized crime. It's about the fact that the government is organized crime. They offer you protection unless you don't do what they tell you, right? Yeah, we'll have the cops come and protect your business unless you don't pay the bylaws. Then we'll come take your fucking business. It's really not much different than the mob. And it's all under a monopoly on violence. At the end of the day, that's why the government's in control. They have the guns. They have the most guns. They have the prisons. They have the lawyers. They have the judges. They have all the people who are going to second tell you that you are in the wrong, and they're going to put you in a fucking hole. And as long as you're terrified of that, that's the life that you're going to live. And they know it. But again, it comes down to a point where people just go, I'm already in a prison. That's when they start to fight back. That's when they start to question the system, is when they start to realize that they're already suffering. You know, there's not a hole that you could put them in that's going to make them suffer more than they are right now. Right. And for a lot of people right now, that's the truth, because they're left in the hole inside their head where they can't stop judging themselves or feeling separate from everyone else. So they've managed to build a prison, or we've managed to build a prison for ourselves that doesn't really have any walls outside the ones that we continue to create with each and every thought.
Oh my God. I've never thought of the government as equally as impact. Like, it's always been kind of a built-in sort of thing to reality for me until like straight up right now. But if it's, you know, take the mob versus the government, like in my head immediately it's like, oh God, it's kind of like good guys, bad guys a little bit. And that's kind of like weird to admit, but it is. But the government isn't inherently tied to reality, and it so much seems like it is. I mean, at least for me, I don't know anyone else, but it seems to be something
we all feel like that.
Yeah,
it's just because it's everywhere. But it wasn't that long ago that it wasn't. You know, like look at the old West, the Wild West in the United States. We're only talking like 200 years ago, right? There were whole swaths of land where there were no cops, there were no roads. There were none. There was nothing. You know, this is why, you know, you had Western shootouts. This is why you had, you know, outlaws and whatnot. They were outlaws because there wasn't a police state to catch them. Right? Like, that was the whole point. The police state was building. To them, they were just people. They were outlaws to the government that was like, well, we have laws and they have to abide by those laws. Well, why do they have to abide by those laws? Well, because this is our land. And it all just keeps coming back to that egotistical need to control and own and dominate. And it really does. It's like, you can't do that. This is my land. And I say, you can't do that. It very much comes back down to, you know, if you don't want to play the way I want to play, I'm going to take my ball and go home. Except in this case, I'm going to imprison you because this is all my fucking home.
Oh my gosh. Like, how inherent it's felt to things. And it's not like, that's not like, even in, you know, talking about just like reality being what it, like there not being a blueprint, there not being a right way, there's so much that goes behind that. And so like, I discount even with police, like growing up, my idea of police was like the good guys, of course, because as long as you're following the rules, like they're protecting you from people who aren't following the rules. So no wonder there's the constant fucking judgment and wondering if I'm, you know, doing the right thing, doing things correctly, doing things the right way, you know, having a plan and sticking to it, knowing how, trying to know how something's going to go out of this deep fear of doing something wrong. Because there is at the extreme of that, you know, the cops will kill you if you do something wrong enough or bad enough. So like, even though it seems like, well, yeah, but I wouldn't do any of those things, because there's...
You don't have to. They could just be afraid of you.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And I know, like, you know, my upbringing and whatever situation I am right now is impacts this a fuckload, but it's fuck, dude. It's like, even that, like, even, oh man, you don't even have to be doing anything wrong. You just be something that they deem to be wrong.
Oh, straight up. And this is why, like, a lot of what I say in terms of going back to the root is what people consider to be controversial, despite the fact that it's not. Like, give you an example. Crime exists for a couple of reasons. One, there are laws. If there are laws, there are crimes. But all of those laws are made to do what? Protect possession of money. And so if people are protecting their possession of money, it immediately creates scarcity, which increases crime. And so if you were to get rid of the money and the idea of possession, suddenly there would be less crime because there would be less laws, thus less criminals and less judgment, including self-judgment, which leads a lot of criminals to be even worse. And all of these things just cascade like dominoes throughout time. And this is the whole point. I made a video the other day saying that one of the lingering unfortunate impacts of the colonizer mentality is the idea that we can own the land at all, that anyone ever did. We are the land. To which somebody said, well, yeah, well, land ownership was something that was believed in by cultures, you know, far before we learned to colonize. It's like, yeah, they're the ones that colonized. Everyone who didn't agree with that. Because everybody, if they didn't, there would be land right now that you wouldn't have to own. And there isn't. Every bit of land on this fucking rock is something you have to own. And it's because people who believed it should be owned and can be owned dominated the world. That's it. It wasn't always that way. We didn't always think that we could own the thing that spawned us. We didn't. That seemed absurd for a very long period of time. It seems absurd now. But if you look at good old King James version of the Bible, God says you shall have dominion over the world. And that just validates everything in terms of our control, our superiority, our place at the top, in terms of everything else. And that just validates the mentality that came before the King James version. It's not to say the King James version is what caused it. It was reflective of it. And so again, this all just comes back down to control. But that's why I'm always very inspired by the fact that you're changing the world right now, you, the listener, just by letting go of your need for control and your belief that it could ever be attained. That's changing the collective mentality. It makes you less likely to be so brittle or in conflict with your neighbor, and that makes us more likely to work together and to start to grow without this fixation on a right path, the one way that we must live. We actually just start to live. And it starts with you. In fact, it's all about you.
I think that's the beauty of this and the reality of this. It's like, it's great. Talk about everything that's going on. It's like, it all stems from you. It all stems from me and my focus on being in control versus being willing to let go, trying to be something versus just being willing to be myself and not judge myself for whatever that is and just be whatever I am and not feel like I have to know what that is or even control that. Even control that. Like, it's not it's not anything that's, I mean, it's reflective, and there's nothing to say, even there's nothing to convince me through all of the world, all of my lifetime, that could tell me that reality isn't reflective of how I am, or I'm not reflective of how reality is. Like, beyond childhood, I feel like that's when we're most at odds, or in our, throughout our experience, been most at odds with the common mentality. But it was because we were kids. We didn't know any better. We didn't know any better than to just be ourselves. Fuck. And since then, it was just like reality was reflective to some degree of just where I'm at, where you're at.
Including the conflict that we were in, trying to be something that we weren't. And that's the conflict that we experienced. Yeah, this has been a good episode. I've definitely enjoyed this. We're going to continue on Patreon in 15 minutes. It's Sunday, which means there's a tier 2 call and a tier 3 call. Anybody who hasn't joined us on a Sunday, do consider it. It's definitely one of my favorite days of the week. The conversation is always very interesting and insightful and enlightening, and sometimes just downright fucking hilarious. I wanted to mention, I talked to Trish from Fidelium over the weekend. Lots of new development there, and then we'll try and get into that tomorrow. I'm going to leave that here for now. We'll talk about it in tomorrow's episode. Exciting stuff, though. Thanks, everyone. We appreciate you being here.
Bye, everyone.